Stein's Sunday Poems.
Here's some rhymes for the times as we go from bad to verse. Summer is a coomin' in. Contrary to popular belief, that does not mean summer is a comin' in. It's the Wessex dialect of Middle English, and it means summer's here. Hip hip hooray. As a canon, as a round, it's the oldest known musical composition in six-part polyphony, and the oldest surviving manuscript of it was found at Reading Abbey and copied down between 1261 and 1264, the swingin' 60s of three quarters of a millennium ago. Who wrote it? That's anybody's guess, but a lot of people plump for William de Wykeham, or Wilhelmus of Winchcombe, as you prefer. But I thought I'd read the words, because you don't always catch all of them as they're being sung polyphonically. I've stuck closely to the Middle English, just substituting a few words here and there to make it comprehensible. But said and med, I left because of the rhyme, and that refers to seed and meadow, said and med, seed and meadow. Still known, still performed, after 800 years or more, summer is a coming in. Summer is a coming in. Loudly sing, cuckoo, growing said and blowing med, and spring in the wood anew, sing, cuckoo. You bleating after lamb, cow lowing after calf, bullocks starting, stags are farting, merry sing, cuckoo. Cuckoo, cuckoo, well you sing, cuckoo, don't ever you stop now, sing cuckoo now, sing cuckoo, sing cuckoo, sing cuckoo now. Would you like to hear the bullocks and the farting sung? That we can do. The Hilliard Ensemble, summer's here. Indeed it is. Earlier this month, I was in Northern Ireland for what Ulster calls the Glorious Twelfth, and what in Canada is known as Orangeman's Day. It's a public holiday in Newfoundland, and I did my best to introduce the term Orangeman's Day to Enniskillen, without much success, I have to say. I was reminded yet again, as I always am when I'm in Northern Ireland, of how deep the troubles pierce. One lady told me casually that she'd lost five family members to the IRA. But nowhere, I think, do the scars penetrate as they do in the village of Clawdy in County Londonderry, 50 years ago, on July 31st, 1972, three car bombs exploded in mid-morning. By then, the rituals of atrocity were well established. The terrorists would plant their devices and then go to a telephone box to alert the authorities and give everyone a sporting chance to flee in terror. But on this July morning, the payphones in surrounding villages were out of order because the IRA had earlier bombed the telephone exchange. So the bombs went off in Claudy without warning. Nine people died, including a nine-year-old girl. Another 30 were injured. That's a lot in a small village, and it gives Claudy a rare distinction. In nearby Londonderry, the fatality rate from the Troubles is about 0.25% of the population. In Belfast, it's about 0.5%. But in Little Claudy, the dead are 1% of the population. That's, I believe, the highest in the province. The revulsion was so widespread that the IRA issued an official statement denying it was anything to do with them. It was everything to do with them and with their South Derry quartermaster, a Catholic priest called Father Chesney, whom everyone from the Royal Ulster Constabulary to the Home Secretary himself, Willie Whitelaw, in London, was reluctant to go anywhere near for fear of damaging, quote, community relations, etc., etc. It's the heartlessness that always gets me when I poke around corners of Ireland. Still, a parish priest who has so dehumanised his neighbours that he's willing to blow up nine-year-old girls is taking it to a whole other level. Earlier this year, John, one of our listeners in Mid-Ulster, sent me a poem about the events of July 31st, 1972, written by the late James Simmons, whom I ran into a couple of times over the years at the BBC. He was the founder of a rather good literary journal called The Honest Ulsterman and of the Resistance Cabaret. He was a working-class Protestant from Derry, so Claudy was right in his backyard, and the horror of what happened moved him. Mr. Simmons died 20 years ago, and his modest poetic reputation has faded somewhat since then. But the directness of this piece and its barely veiled contempt for those men looking for a working telephone is undeniably powerful. Written by James Simmons. Claudy. The Sperrins surround it, the fawn flows by, at each end of Main Street, the hills and the sky. The small town of Claudy at ease in the sun, last July in the morning, a new day begun. How peaceful and pretty! If the moment could stop, McElhenny is straightening things in his shop. And his wife is outside serving petrol, and then a girl takes a cloth to a big window pane. And McCloskey is taking the weight off his feet, and McClelland and Miller are sweeping the street. And delivering milk at the Beaufort Hotel, young Temple's enjoying his first job quite well. And Mrs. McLaughlin is scrubbing her floor, and Artie Hone's crossing the street to a door, and Mrs. Brown, looking around for her cat, goes off up an entry. What's strange about that? Not much. But before she comes back to the road, that strange car parked outside her house will explode. And all of the people I've mentioned outside will be waiting to die, or already have died. An explosion too loud for your eardrums to bear, and young children squealing like pigs in the square, and all faces chalk white and streaked with bright red, and the glass and the dust and the terrible dead. For an old lady's legs are ripped off, and the head of a man's hanging open, and still he's not dead. He is screaming for mercy, and his son stands and stares, and stares, and then suddenly quick disappears. And Christ, little Catherine Aiken is dead, and Mrs. McLaughlin is pierced through the head. Meanwhile, to Dungiven, the killers have gone, and they're finding it hard to get through on the phone. The English String Orchestra, conducted by William Boughton, playing Frank Bridges' piece, An Irish Melody, from 1908 for string quartet. 30 years later, he rescored it for string orchestra, which version I happen to have a mild preference for. The Irish Melody in question, as you'll have figured out, is the Londonderry air, whose origins and whose composer are unknown. The Londonderry of the title refers not to the town, but to the county in which the village of Clawdy sits. With that in mind, and with James Simmons' recitation of the Dead of Clawdy still fresh in our heads, let's add the words. Here's Rhoda Barfoot.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the flowers are dying. 'Tis you, 'tis you must go, and I must bite. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. 'Tis I'll be here or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so. Thank you.
Many lyrics were affixed to the Londonderry air before those ones stuck and rendered all the others obsolete. Danny Boy by Fred Weatherly, KC, King's Counsel, a barrister from Somerset who also wrote one of my very favourite songs, Roses of Picardy. We have had a lot of comments about Rhoda Barfoot's music since I played her singing Galway Bay a few months ago. I've heard Danny Boy, as I'm sure you have, done every which way over the years. But what I like about Miss Barfoot's version is that it makes you hear it afresh, as if the song were brand new. I thank her for that, and somehow in her rendition, the lines seem right for this terrible summer anniversary in Clawdy. Let us go from a village in County Londonderry to somewhere, I think, rather grander. What would you do if Lord Tennyson died and you had to find someone to replace him as Poet Laureate? Well, the first thing to do is probably slow walk the thing. Tennyson died in 1892 and they just sat on the job vacancy for a year or two or three or four because the best available poets came with a lot of baggage. Swinburne, for example, was a notorious decadent. He had spread the rumour that he had had sex with a monkey and then eaten his lover. This disgusted Oscar Wilde because he thought it all a lot of hooey. Swinburne, he said, quote, is a braggart in matters of vice who has done everything he could to convince his fellow citizens of his homosexuality and bestiality without being in the slightest degree a homosexual or a bestializer. But the self-promoted gossip was enough to cost him the post of Poet Laureate. William Morris never claimed to be dining on his simian sex partners, but he was an anti-imperialist radical. In the end, they offered him the job and he turned them down. So in 1896, they made Alfred Austin Poet Laureate, mainly because he was a political ally of the Prime Minister, Lord Salisbury. If you've never heard of Alfred Austin, well, nobody reads him today, and the critics thought little of him back then, dismissing him as a, quote, banjo Byron. But there is one poem of his which I'm rather partial, mainly because if you've heard me on Rush or GB News, you'll know I like the name Mabel, and I regret its disappearance from our world. When I was young, I had a great aunt called Mabel, and now I have a dog called Mabel. You've seen the dog on telly on both sides of the Atlantic, which isn't bad for a pooch who's only a year and a half. And you can see my aunt hanging in the National Gallery of Ireland, if you're that interested. Anyway, here is a rather droll vignette conjured by the not yet Poet Laureate, first published a century and a half ago in the collection Interludes, written in 1872 by Alfred Austin. Lady Mabel. Side by side with Lady Mabel sat I with the sunshade down. In the distance hummed the babel of the many-footed town. There we sat with looks unstable, now of tenderness, of frown. Must we part, or may I linger? Wax the shadows, wanes the day. Then with voice of sweetest singer, that hath all but died away. Go, she said, but tightened finger said articulately, stay. Face to face with Lady Mabel, with the gauzy curtains drawn, till a sense I am unable to portray began to dawn, till the slant sun flung the gable far athwart the sleepy lawn. Now I go. Adieu, adieu, love. This is weakness. Sweet, be strong. Comes the footfall of the dew, love, Philomel's reminding song. Go, she said, but I go too, love, go with you my life along. Breast to breast with Lady Mabel, shrouded by the courteous night, baffling all the forms of fable, to describe our dreams aright, and as pure as gifts of Abel, in the omnipresent sight. A poem from me to you by Alfred Austin, Lady Mabel. Are you reluctant to bid farewell to Mabel? Well, let's linger a while.
You know, people, I said, it'll never do. I can't help the way I feel when I'm with you. Now, Mabel, are you able to come out today? It's a lovely day. Hello, Mabel, if you're able, slip out on your own. Leave your shirt alone, and we can be alone. People may say that it will never do, but I can't help the way. Hello, Mabel, if you're able, say you'll come, please do. For an hour or two, you know I love you.
Hello, Mabel, written by Neil Innes for the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. Mr. Innes rhymes Mabel with Abel, as Alfred Austin does, although Mr. Austin has in mind Gifts of Abel, A-B-E-L, as in Cain and. And the poet laureate also rhymes Mabel with Babel, Unstable, Unable, Gable, and Fable, all of which Neil Innes steers well clear of. It's almost as if Mr. Austin was doing a little rhyming dictionary exercise for himself there. As I said, the poem comes from Alfred Austin's anthology of 1872, Interludes, and the only reason I was rummaging through that volume was because I was reminding myself of Mr. Austin's poem At Shelley's Grave, which I couldn't recall a word of, so I looked it up. And I thought it a stinker, frankly, pompous and leaden and quite unworthy of its subject. So I was glad to be able to flip a few pages earlier and present Lady Mabel instead. But this summer is the bicentennial of the death of Percy Bysshe Shelley, as you'll know if you've seen our most recent video poem. I touched in that episode on Mary Shelley's decades-long widowhood with her late husband's shriveled and calcified heart always to hand in her writing desk. The pithiest summation of Mrs. Shelley was by their friend Lee Hunt in a couplet from the Blue Stocking Revels. And Shelley, forefamed for her parents, her lord, and the poor lone impossible monster abhorred. He means she's famous for her mother, the Protean feminist Mary Wollstonecraft, for her father, the anarchist philosopher and novelist William Godwin, for her husband, the poet Shelley, for her Boffo literary creation, Frankenstein's monster, a creation that quickly became more famous than its creator, and even more so in our own time, thanks to motion pictures and other adaptations. But she's not really famous for herself. Be that as it may, it was a rich and full life, save for the absence of her husband. Here is a poem written in Mary's hand at some point during her 3 decades as a widow. It was unpublished during her lifetime, and the handwritten manuscript not discovered until 1930. By Mary Shelley, Absence. Ah, he is gone, and I alone. How dark and dreary seems the time. 'Tis thus when the glad sun is flown, night rushes o'er the Indian clime. Is there no star to cheer this night? No soothing twilight for the breast? Yes, memory sheds her fairy light, pleasing as sunset's golden west. And hope of dawn, oh, brighter far than clouds that in the orient burn, more welcome than the morning star, is the dear thought, he will return. Dario Muller, playing the fourth of Edward MacDowell's 4 Little Poems of 1888. The poems are all impressionistic piano pieces, but this one was prompted by an actual poem by Shelley, a widow bird sat mourning for her love. as Mary Shelley did through the long years. Mr. McDowell called his piece Winter. So we started with summer is a coming in, and now winter is a coming in. Not sure how that happened, but let's right the ship and close where we came in. I fancy an instrumental version. Let's say, tenor viol, and how about, come on, where have you stashed the lute? Lute and tenor viol. Summer is coming in.
Mark Stein's Sunday Poems is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.